This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Schools are closed, businesses shut down, and Central Florida's tourism engine has ground to a halt as coronavirus cases continue to rise statewide. Today on Intersection, we will be discussing the impact of the pandemic. We want to ask you too, what is the pandemic? What impact is it having on your life? And what questions do you have? You may be one of the thousands of people trying to figure out work from home and homeschool at the same time. Maybe you rely on Orlando's massive tourism industry for your livelihood. So what help do you need? And what answers are you looking for? And also, what are your health questions about the disease? Just a note too, if you're following along with the President's press conference, you can follow that still on our website. That's WMFE.org if you want to keep following the President's press conference while Intersection is underway. Well, joining me is Dr. Omira Mansfield. She's an emergency medicine physician and she's the Chief Medical Officer at Advent Health Apopka and Advent Health Winter Garden. Dr. Mansfield, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to join us on Intersection today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're also joined by economic commentator Hank Fishkind. He's the president of Fishkind Litigation Services. The economic impact, of course, of the pandemic is one of the stories we are following closely. Dr. Fishkind, thank you for being here as well. We will be joined by Dr. Fishkind in a minute. Well, I want to start with you, Dr. Mansfield. So, obviously, this is a critical time for an emergency room physician, for any doctor scrambling to sort of figure out how to respond to this pandemic. How are you doing? How are you coping today?
I think we're probably like most other people, just trying to stay focused on what we need to do ourselves to keep ourselves and our family safe. And then, of course, trying to make sure that our teams feel educated and prepared and that they're in a position to appropriately inform the community.
Mm-hmm. What about staffing, too? I mean, there is a lot of information sort of floating around about what's happening in other countries, the kinds of responses that hospitals have had to put in place to cope with the surge in patients. In terms of what Advent Health at these two locations that you oversee from the medical perspective is doing, what kind of preparations are you making? What sort of stuff do you have in place?
So we have been in preparation mode now for several weeks. Obviously, we, I think, are at a slight advantage as compared to our colleagues in China and Italy in that we are able to now try to apply lessons learned from those countries and really try to be more anticipatory as to what we think will be coming. And so for now, weeks, gosh, even more than a month, we've been talking about everything from what will our staffing patterns look like, what will be our progression of staffing depending on the volume of patients that we may anticipate, what do we do with our supplies, how do we take care of what could be scarce resources, and then really just systematically look at, as a system, what do we have in place and how can we leverage that to the benefit of our patients. So We've been looking at all those things across our company, particularly in the Central Florida area, for the last several weeks, and obviously this is an evolving process, so really trying to tailor it and modify as the situation has unfolded.
Mm-hmm. You can call in with your questions too. We're at 1-866-338-5252. That's 1-866-338-5252. You can reach out to us with your questions and comments on Twitter as well. We're at WMFE Orlando. Information is critical in a situation like this, and we do have a doctor on the line. We can put some of those questions about that people may be feeling and thinking to Dr. Mansfield. Abe Abarayas, 90.7's health reporter. Abe, thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
Just a quick update. What is the latest on coronavirus in terms of numbers we're seeing statewide? Any details on what's happening here in Central Florida?
Yeah, I'm actually pulling those numbers up as we speak right now. At this point, we know that Florida has surpassed that 300 case marks. We're actually at 360. It's 30 cases that are non-Florida residents, 390 total. And for a little bit of context on that, you know, at this point in the stage, we're not getting sort of the wide level of testing. And so, you know, the kind of expectation that we have is that we're going to continue to see that number of cases to rise.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we know that South Florida in particular seems to be the areas, Broward and Dade counties are where we're seeing the concentrations of the most. Where we're likely seeing community transmission of the virus.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the rest of the state goes, you know, I would expect those numbers to continue to rise. And I wouldn't necessarily be alarmed by that. That's actually probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that means that we're getting the testing out and we're getting the results back from that.
Right. Dr. Mansfield, public health officials, you know, from the very top down, from the federal level all the way down to the state and local level, have been stressing that people don't flood the emergency room unless they're having trouble breathing or chest pain. What kind of guidelines can you give people that may be wondering when it's okay to go to the ER?
That's a great question, and one that we really appreciate that the word is getting out. So there is a whole spectrum of how this disease can manifest in patients. And as we've probably heard a number of times, the vast majority of patients will have mild symptoms, and they really do not need the level of care that would be expected in an emergency department, and something that could be cared for very appropriately at home, maybe under the guidance of their primary care doctor or an urgent care setting. Mm-hmm. And so with the emergency department, we're trying to utilize those resources for really the acutely ill that require emergent intervention or more urgent intervention. And that's why we're giving the guidance of if you are struggling to breathe, if you are short of breath, if you are manifesting with chest pain, if it's a family member and obviously their level of arousal is diminished, mm-hmm. those would certainly be indications that absolutely you should seek emergency care. But for those manifesting, and the numbers that we see are, you know, at least about 80% of patients will really have more mild symptoms, flu, cold-like symptoms, that would be a really great place to reach out to their local primary care doctors. Oftentimes, they're recommending even by phone, mm-hmm. Just because we also don't necessarily want to expose them and the rest of the office team to the potential that it could be a positive case. But that's where those type of resources will be the best for that patient. We really want to make sure we're sending people to the appropriate level of care.
What about people who have been told to quarantine at home if they're ill? Any different advice for them specifically?
Not necessarily. If we're asking people to quarantine at home, it's because we do have a suspicion that they might have the illness. And the goal is to, first of all, we want them to be taking care of themselves. So just as you would with, let's say, a flu-like illness, you know, adequate hydration, really trying to abate the symptoms, symptomatic treatment that you would do at home. But part of that quarantine at home is also the fact that we really want to try to mitigate the spread of this illness, what we call flattening the curve. Mm-hmm. The more that we can do that and trying to keep that social isolation while people are also recovering, this is really what we think is going to be able to help us maintain the right level of resources in the community.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Intersection Live on 90.7 and 89.5. I'm Matthew Petty, joined by a panel to discuss the impact of the coronavirus pandemic in Central Florida. You can call in with your questions as well. 1-866-338-5252 is the number. Got a question or a comment to make about the pandemic and the impact it might be having on your life? You can also reach out to us on Twitter. We're at WMFE Orlando, taking your comments and questions there as well. Well, Central Florida runs on tourism, and so obviously people have been watching closely as theme parks have closed. There have been restrictions put in place in restaurants. The bars are shutting down. This is going to have a huge impact. It already is having a huge impact on a big slice of the economy here in Central Florida. Hank Fishkind, economic commentator, I want to bring you into this conversation. What are you sort of thinking about as you watch the numbers come in daily? I mean, the changes are kind of happening on an hour-by-hour basis as far as directions on how to try and flatten the curve, as Dr. Mansfield was saying. What are your thoughts at this point?
Well, it's absolutely necessary to flatten the curve and to restrict movement, and that has big economic consequences, of course, because we're shutting down major parts of the economy. The only good news out of this is that the duration, while unknown, is not going to last forever. What we know from the experience in China, which was most affected, was it was about 90 to 120 days, Matthew.
Mm-hmm. I guess the thing to keep in mind there too, though, and Abe, I don't know if you want to weigh in on this. I mean, what we've seen out of China is their, you know, their approach to the pandemic. While by all accounts it might have been a bit slow to get going in the first place, they moved pretty aggressively to lock people down, keep them in place. The testing was a lot more aggressive and thorough than what we've seen here in the United States so far. So I guess we kind of have to be careful when we make comparisons to other countries, right, Abe?
Yeah, we do need to be careful. You know, they one of the big differences between, you know, the response in China versus the response in the United States at this point, China was able to actually put entire cities on complete lockdown and just shut down a lot more of the economy and have a lot more control on, when people were leaving their buildings, that they were making sure that they were getting temperature checks and things like that. So a lot of those measures we haven't seen here. And those kind of measures, if they were to be put in place, would be, the level of response at this point from the public on some of these current restrictions, which, are unprecedented in the United States as well, I think. We're not at that level of response yet. Mm-hmm. And so, it's going to be difficult to have that level of response here, I think. But if it comes down to it, it's going to have, then it would be a bit more of an apples to apples comparison. I'll let Hank talk about the economics on it.
Yeah, Hank, thinking about that, I mean, what are your thoughts when you see what's going on in Italy or China or even, South Korea at this point?
Well, the countries are quite different. South Korea, Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan had very robust testing procedures and did not need to shut down most of their economies because they had an ability to track and contain.
Mm-hmm.
Italy, Spain, United States, China did not. So what's happened in China is that retail sales are down 20%. GDP mm-hmm. output is down 15%. So huge amounts, huge volume. But the duration is relatively short. We are having a similar huge disruption. It's going to be tremendously disruptive, costly, and how bad it is economically will depend upon how robust the policy response is.
Right. Got a question now I want to bring in from Joel, who is asking about testing sites. Joel, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hi, good afternoon. I was wondering where there are testing sites in downtown Orlando. I have a bunch of friends that are concerned they might have it, and there's obstacles like employability because they don't want to lose their jobs because that's their current source of income.
Mm-hmm.
And they're worried about medical bills. If insurances are covering it, if they aren't covering it, they don't have insurance. So just wondering what they're doing for the downtown Orlando citizens.
Yeah, that's a great question. Abe, what are you hearing there?
Well, kind of the first point is one of the aid packages that has been signed by President Trump does have a mandate that testing is free. So there is at least that consideration that is, off the table as a worry. As far as actually finding somewhere to get tested, the best thing to do on that is going to be I'm going to give you the health department's number for this. So if you want to, they have a 24/7 call center at this point, and they can help you direct you. So your first call is going to be to if you have a primary care doctor, that's your first call. If you don't have a primary care doctor, the number is 866-779-6121. It's 866-779-6121. So you can give that number a call and, you talk to them about where to get testing. As far as getting tested more broadly, that county health department in Orange County is talking about having a setup at the Orange County Convention Center to do some drive-through testing. That's not up and operational yet. And they're also talking about having another location over on the east side of town off of Alafaya Trail.
Mm-hmm.
The one on Alafaya Trail in particular is going to be by appointment only for people who qualify for the testing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we have seen down in South Florida is when they open these drive-through locations, people who are worried about, have I had exposure to this, kind of show up and are looking for symptoms. That's not what they're looking for. They don't have enough tests to run tests on everyone who comes through. They're looking for people who have symptoms, who are over a certain age. I want to say it's 65 or 60. Don't quote me on that at this point. But they're looking for people like that are symptomatic and that are in the higher risk categories to test them.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as if you are just in a different category, the best thing for you to do is, like I said, start with your primary care, then the health department if you can't get through there. And there's also it's COVID-19@flhealth.gov. It's COVID-19@flhealth.gov. That's another way you can try and reach out to the health department.
Some good advice there. Thank you so much for calling in, Joel, with your question about testing there. Before we go to a break, I did want to just throw that to Dr. Amira Mansfield at Advent Health. I mean, does Advent, do the hospitals that you are running the medical services of, is there any kind of testing capacity there as yet?
So we have had the capacity to test, but as was just mentioned, we follow very strict guidelines as to which patients are appropriate for testing.
Mm-hmm.
This is still in the United States a limited resource, and so we have to be very intentional about how we're using that. And so we do follow the CDC guidelines, adhere to those very closely. And actually, those are available for the public to pull up as well to take a look at. And I would note that they have been evolving. Those mm-hmm. those guidelines today are not what they were a few days ago, and certainly not what they were last week.
Right.
And so we really we have to stay to that. We do have the capability to do that, but we do adhere to that very closely.
Can I ask a quick clarifying question? You said you have capacity. Are you guys able to do the testing in-house in the hospital within your own laboratory departments, or are you sending it out? Because if you're sending it out, I'm wondering what the turnaround time is to get those results.
That's a great question. It's both, and the turnaround time is delayed right now because there is such a high volume. Absolutely.
What's the turnaround time you're looking at?
I can't tell you off the top of my head right now just because I know it has varied day to day.
Okay.
And I don't want to tell you inaccurately.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. We're talking about the coronavirus pandemic and the impact in Central Florida. Taking your calls, 1-866-338-5252. You can also reach out to us with your questions and comments on Twitter at WMFE Orlando. Our panelists are 90.7's Abe Abarayar, our health reporter. We're also joined by Dr. Hank Fishkind, economic analyst, and Dr. Omira Mansfield, the chief medical officer for Advent Health in Apopka and Winter Garden. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Intersection on WMFE and WMFV. With all the messages flying around about coronavirus in the last few weeks, what questions do you have about the disease? How has the shutdown of businesses and schools affected your life? You can reach us at 1-866-338-5252. Also on Twitter at WMFE Orlando. With me on the show today, Dr. Omira Mansfield. She's the Chief Medical Officer at Advent Health Apopka and Advent Health Winter Garden. Economic commentator Hank Fishkind, President of Fishkind Litigation Services, and 90.7 Health Reporter Abe Abarayar. Abe, just thinking back to what we were talking about before the break, testing, what do we know about the numbers, the capacity, the availability so far?
So one of the reasons why we're talking about expecting to see more cases come through is because we know the number of outstanding tests. So at this point, the state has done about 2,900 tests in total. 390 of those are positive. So that's how we know there are 390 confirmed cases in Florida. You've also had 1,500 roughly that are negative. So there's 1,500 people that were tested and that came back negative, did not have COVID-19. There's 1,000 tests that are pending at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that number we've seen, you know, stays roughly the same because there is, as Dr. Mansfield was explaining, there is that backlog and there is some delay in getting the results from that. So with 1,000 tests pending, we know that there are people who, you know, at least 1,000 people across the state who are meeting the diagnostic criteria to get tested. And so, you know, in a lot of these cases as well, they're going to be testing for some of the more common things before they're running that COVID-19 test. So they're going to already be ruled out for, you know, flu and some of the other more common ones. So that's why we're expecting that number to grow.
Mm-hmm. I have a comment here on Twitter from our political commentator, Frank Torres. He writes in, it seems like Orlando is tourism Superman that's found its kryptonite in this health-related threat. How can we prevent ourselves from being so vulnerable and allowing this to happen again? So kind of thinking to the future, Hank Fishkind, thoughts on that? Is this the moment that Orlando takes a breath and says, we just need to diversify?
No, I don't really think so. You know, we have 20% of our total employment in leisure and hospitality, and it just can't be turned around anytime quickly. So I really don't think that's what's going to happen. I do think there's going to be a lot of significant consequences structurally to our healthcare system and to our unemployment compensation system, but I don't think Orlando's economy is going to quickly diversify.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's bring in some voices from folks who are kind of struggling with how to run their business in this time of coronavirus. Chris Rock is the co-owner of Rock Pit Brewing in South Orlando. He says the tap room has stopped serving based on guidance from local and state leaders, although he's still open for takeout service. But he says he's still unclear about what he's allowed to do and where to get that help.
The biggest thing right now is there is so much confusion about what we can and can't do. what are the thresholds? What options do we have? I know that they just introduced some small business relief plan. What are we supposed to do, right? I mean, our chief priority, again, keep our doors open and keep our employees employed. And if there's help, all of the stuff that we're seeing, it's not coming from, I'm not seeing it anyways. Maybe I'm missing it from leaders in the business world. It's coming from Facebook.
Well, some thoughts there from Chris Rock, co-owner of Rockpit Brewing in South Orlando. It sounds to me, Hank Fishkind, that there's some confusion about what kind of help is available. And I know the situation's evolving very quickly. We're hearing different things from the federal government, the state government, day to day as the pandemic evolves. What would your advice be to business owners who are kind of struggling through this and saying, how do I keep my business afloat and make sure that my staff are going to be okay through this?
Well, one would have to look and aggressively use whatever government programs are being made available. Here in Florida, Governor DeSantis activated a $15 million SBA credit program. And nationally, I think we're going to see not only the paid leave, which was passed the other day, but we're going to quickly see a very massive program to send money directly to people and to small businesses. But that is not scheduled to unfold until the week of April 6th.
Mm-hmm. I want to hear, too, from Casey Clark. She owns a home cleaning company. She says she's stopped taking on new clients amid concerns over coronavirus, and some clients are cancelling service. She is planning on applying for the state bridge loan program, but she worries about her business long term.
I would hope that $50,000 would be enough to at least float us for the next couple of months to survive. So hopefully that would be enough. It would be kind of scary to take on a huge loan as a small business when you don't even know what the future holds for the time being.
So the message we're hearing from, you know, Casey Clark and others, of course, is that the future is really an unknown. And I think that's kind of some of the messaging we're getting from the top as well. We just don't know exactly how this is going to evolve. Hank Fishkind, one thing we do know is that even before this, Central Florida had a housing crisis, right? I mean, there's a federal directive suspending evictions for the time being, but Central Florida was already struggling with this. What does this pandemic do to add to that mix, that situation?
Well, it just makes it all the much harder because people are going to be under tremendous financial stress, Matthew.
Mm-hmm. Let's come back to Dr. Omira Mansfield, Chief Medical Officer at Advent Health Apopka and Advent Health Winter Garden. I'm just sort of thinking about this from the medical perspective. What do we know about how contagious this new coronavirus is, or are we still trying to gather some data on that?
I think we're still in the process of gathering data, but thankfully we have been very diligent in trying to already identify just some baseline lessons learned. So just in some of the recent literature, it does look to have a good amount of time that people can be exposed to it. We do believe that it is spread by droplet, and as a result of that, that's actually somewhat of a blessing, I would say, simply because when we talk about that social isolation and keeping about 6 feet from people, we know that that helps try to mitigate the spread because most people don't spread droplets more than 6 feet unless there's a ability to aerosolize it. But there is it is an infectious disease, just like, for example, influenza is. And so that's why we need to be mindful that there are things and strategies that everybody can do to try to prevent that spread.
And thinking about vulnerable populations, we've talked a lot about the elderly because that they seem to be in the kind of age bracket that is the most at risk from scenes we're seeing abroad and, of course, here in the United States. But what about other folks, like people who have had recent surgery? Would they be at greater risk potentially?
So certainly when you recover from surgery, it would depend on the type of surgery that you're recovering from in terms of what type of an insult it may have caused to your body. So we do know that the elderly, particularly those who are over 60, 65 years of age, are the greatest risk category when we look at what has occurred in other countries. Those patients who have their immunocompromised, certainly cancer patients or people who are on immunosuppressant therapy, just at baseline, their body doesn't have the ability to fight illness as compared to someone who does not have that illness at baseline. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing other patients who have some chronic diseases, such as chronic lung disease, chronic coronary artery disease, or chronic heart disease, diabetic. So patients that just really, you know, their bodies just need a little bit more to get through illnesses, regardless of the situation, this particular virus, we know, does impact them with a higher severity.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic in Central Florida. I want to take your calls as well, your thoughts on what sort of impact you're seeing and questions you may have about the medical side of things, the business side of things, what the other side of this looks like for Central Florida. We're at 1-866-338-5252. That's 1-866-338-5252. You can also reach out to us on Twitter with your questions and comments. We're at WMFE Orlando. Abe Abariah, there's been kind of a change in messaging from the federal level around coronavirus in the last week. I mean, is that going to mean more help for Florida? And does that mean that we will get more federal help for the likes of perhaps staffing, maybe from the military to help with the mid-surge, field hospitals, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think we are going to see more of that. At this point, we know FEMA has been activated as well. You know, obviously, this is a bit of a atypical response for them as an agency, but you know, we are expecting to see the ability to have these sort of field hospitals be stood up. We actually, you know, we do have experience with this. You know, during some of the hurricanes when the hospitals have been damaged, mm-hmm. You know, and have water intrusion, you know, these field hospitals were set up in parking lots and things like that. So it's not something that's brand new in Florida. It's something we've seen before, but in this case, it is a little bit different because we're talking about having these field hospitals be available for testing. So they do have the capability. They have, you know, they're trying to have enough ventilators and staffing and things to have an actual field hospital available. Mm-hmm. But one of the main things that they're talking about doing initially is they want to move that testing into a location that's outside of the hospital. And they want to do that for a number of reasons. One, you want to basically have an ability to limit people who might be infectious to one area, so you're not necessarily going to be infecting as much staff in a hospital. And then you also want to be able to protect the people that might be more vulnerable who are already in a hospital, who might already be there because they, you know, are immunocompromised or are there, you know, dealing with surgeries and other illnesses. So you mm-hmm. want to make sure that it's kind of a twofold thing, that if people are able to be tested in a different location, that you're moving them there.
Yeah, and as far as sort of trying to predict where the surge is going to be, I mean, you were talking about South Florida earlier, and it seems like that's where we're seeing more of the cases at this point. But basically, the entire state of Florida, you know, there are question marks around how much testing we can do, where we're going to see that surge next, and what impact that's going to have on this very heavily populated, very big state.
Well, I think more broadly there's been some reluctance from state leaders to, you know, to definitively say that we're having community transmission. You know, there are cases where they're saying it's under investigation. We don't know where this person was. This person doesn't have a known travel history. They don't have regular contact with someone who's been diagnosed. So there's some of these cases that are under investigation. I think that reluctance might change kind of going forward, because at this point, you know, everything that's being done, it's not just Florida that, you know, because the original fear is that, you know, if you start having local transmission and community transmission in Florida, like we mm-hmm. saw with the Zika virus a few years back, that it could have a major impact on the tourism industry. Well, that impact is already here. So we might start seeing state leaders talk a little bit more about, okay, we do think this is community transmission happening in different parts of the state. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we don't have, like we've talked about already, that testing is not yet there to the full capacity. So that's going to be a little bit harder to determine, you know, whether or not we do have some of that local transmission.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. We're talking about the local response to coronavirus, the impact of the pandemic here in Central Florida, the impact it's having on you. We want to hear from you, your stories about this impact a couple of days into this crisis here in Central Florida as it evolves, and what you're doing to try and adapt and thinking about the future too. You can reach us at 1-866-338-5252. Also on Twitter at WMFE Orlando. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7. We are talking about the impact of coronavirus here in Central Florida. I want to hear your stories too. What impact has this pandemic had on your work? What about school? Are you still trying to figure out work from home and school at the same time? One of the thousands of people maybe who rely on Orlando's massive tourism industry for your livelihood. And what help do you need? What answers are you looking for? We're at 1-866-338-5252. You can also reach out to us with your comments and questions on Twitter at WMFE Orlando. The panel with us today, Dr. Amira Mansfield, Chief Medical Officer at Advent Health, Apopka, and Advent Health Winter Garden. Economic commentator Hank Fishkind, President of Fishkind Litigation Services, and 90.7 Health Reporter Abe Abariah. I'm going to go to Debbie now. Debbie is calling in from Orlando. Debbie, what is your question?
I am curious, and thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
I'm curious how the response will be for people that are more and more disadvantaged. Things are closing and people are being sent home to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering about how the homeless, if there's going to be more effort to help people. I myself am going through vocational rehab,
mm-hmm.
and I was not on the unemployment list before I tried to get on with vocational rehab. So will there be compensation for people that weren't employed and are, you know, now they've already been, or they are just now starting to look for something?
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't have housing before, how are you going to find it now? And can Florida loosen some of their strings so that people can do creative housing here?
Right. Those are some good questions. Debbie, thanks so much for calling in. I want to put that to you maybe, Abe. The homeless, what are we hearing about resources for them? I mean, obviously the library has closed, so people can't sort of go to a place during the day, at least now that they might have relied on in the past. And I know that homeless services are kind of ramping up, at least in terms of providing meals and things. But what else is out there and what health concerns might there be?
Well, the health concern, particularly with homeless and other vulnerable populations, is that these are groups that are the transmission. You know, if COVID-19 were to get into say a tent camp or something of that effect, that it'd be easier to potentially be spread. Now, as far as services being increased, we know that's something that we've heard the Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer talk about. I think it's going to be, a little bit more difficult to put some of these things in play just because, at a time when, this question of social distancing is being, put out there, I think we're going to start seeing more of the service providers that are typically out there are going to struggle with the idea of, do we still go out there and have communications and interactions with people,
mm-hmm.
And fulfill that mission, or do we, try and have our folks sort of social distance.
Mm-hmm. On the homelessness question, Hank Fishkind, this seems like it's kind of an evolving and massive challenge that local authorities are going to have to be thinking about, right? What are your thoughts on what they might be doing to try and prepare for this?
Well, local officials are going to be under tremendous pressure. They're going to be under financial pressure. I mean, here in Orlando and Orange County, significant revenue comes from the tourism industry.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking at a problem where they have less resources, more things that they have to deal with on an emergency basis. So it's going to be hard to expand services to the homeless in this environment. But it really points to a longer-term structural problem that's obvious to everybody, not only about housing, but about our public health systems and how we take care of everybody, because if we don't, we put everybody at risk.
Mm-hmm. I want to get another call in here from Susan in Brevard County. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I am concerned about what are we doing about independent ambulatory surgery centers and even physical therapy places that maybe are staying open when other places in the country, I know that they've closed them already. And is there anything to say about that?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Well, let me put that to Dr. Amira Mansfield. What's Advent Health doing about that now? Is that kind of case by case to see how it evolves? Or have you already taken steps to say we're going to kind of pull back from some of the things that aren't urgent?
Yes, we have already taken those steps. Just in the last probably 5 days, maybe actually 6 days now, there has been a lot of conversation, particularly at the national level, for example, from the American College of Surgeons, the Ford Hospital Association. So a number of different organizations have put out what are the best practice recommendations right now. And so in response to that, we have been very intentional about identifying what can wait, what is elective. But at the same time, we have to be mindful that we still have patients that do really have urgent and emergent needs. Mm-hmm. And in those cases, how do we manage them safely? Although COVID-19 is what is the predominant conversation, people still have their everyday healthcare problems and emergencies. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be very specific about knowing about how we can safely care for those patients, but at the same time, identifying those cases, procedures, opportunities that we can have patients safely wait to do those until mm-hmm. we're in a better situation.
And we did see the Surgeon General of the United States, last weekend, had a tweet about, basically asking hospitals to do this, and it kind of caused a bit of confusion of like, oh, is this, going to be a mandate from is this going to be a mandate from the federal government to start doing this, or is this a recommendation? And we saw a little bit of pushback because, the big question is, what do you deem elective, orthopedic versus heart surgery or something like that. Obviously, some of that's going to be an easier question and I don't have to answer it, thank God. But, that was definitely a little bit of push and pull over the weekend we saw just on a communications front.
Mm-hmm. Tweet here from Gabby who writes, how concerned should I be about being around my grandma and how seriously should I be concerned about her contracting COVID-19? I'm 22 and healthy, but I'm still working. I live with my roommate. I see my dad daily, but that's it. I feel so lost, anxious, and protective. Yeah, a lot of concerns that a lot of people are feeling. Dr. Mansfield, thoughts on that? The importance of steering clear of your elderly loved ones at a time like this? What do you do?
That is probably something that all of us are personally struggling with. And I just appreciate whoever put that tweet that they are so mindful and are asking that question. And that just speaks volumes. They really do have an opportunity here to make a difference. It's actually nice to hear a young person being aware that they actually do play a role in this. This is not just a problem that needs to be managed for people who are in the elderly population or have other significant medical problems. Mm-hmm. We all really need to be mindful about what are we doing ourselves to not just take care of ourselves, but keeping ourselves a distance from individuals that we may ultimately spread an illness. And so really they need to be mindful about good hand hygiene, taking good care of themselves. And then if they are becoming symptomatic or if there's a concern, they really, really do need to be aware that they should not be around other individuals, but especially those that are more of an at-risk population.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though. I mean, thinking about what's happening in Italy and reading some of the data there, that kind of the fact that you have a culture where young folks are a lot more likely to sort of be spending time with their loved ones who are elderly, grandparents, et cetera. I mean, it's kind of tragic. Well, it is tragic that you have this society where there is that contact between the young and the old, and that is exacerbating the spread of the disease. And sort of thinking about what, enforced period of separation is going to mean for a lot of elderly, that's a real concern, right, Dr. Mansfield?
It is, because on the other hand, you're right, there could be problems in terms of, feeling isolated, the depression that can cause. But I would encourage us to let's be creative. This is a perfect opportunity to leverage our technology. I'll give you an example to the other extreme. I have a 5-year-old daughter and she misses her best friend, so we have them FaceTiming. We just have to be thoughtful about how do we still maintain contact and also just to make sure that they're safe and healthy so that someone is checking in on them. But maybe we can leverage our technology a little bit better in this case.
Mm-hmm. I want to take a call from Randall now. Randall from Orlando, you're on the air.
Yes. Being that the testing takes so long to get back, how do we know the numbers are not skewed and people have already recovered from coronavirus?
Yeah, that's a great question. Abe, what do we know about that?
There's no real good way to answer that question. I To be frank, there I can't think of a way. I don't know if Dr. Mansfield, if you want to excuse me.
Dr. Mansfield.
Sorry, I butchered your name there. But I don't know if you want to touch on that, because it is, you know, a thing that I've heard from a number of people is, well, how do we know that, you know, I got sick a few months ago? How do I know that I didn't have COVID and I just recovered? And there are people who are saying, well, we need to be reporting more about, you know, the people who have recovered, you know, that it's being, you know, it's causing more fear than is warranted. But it, at the same time, you know, to your question, as far as the testing, I don't think we have that answer.
Yeah, Dr. Mansfield, I mean, what are your thoughts on that at this point?
It's probably the most valid pressing question right now, because we also the impact that, because we don't have that extensive testing, we also don't have a clear rate of mortality. So when your denominator for testing is so small, the numbers can look elevated because we're not doing this vast amount of testing like we saw in other countries. The other thing I would point out, though, is that for those individuals who, for example, a month or two ago were sick, right now we can say that it's more likely that what they had was one of the much more common viruses. So, for example, we were still in flu season very significantly just a month or two ago. Mm-hmm. And so common things being common, it was still the case, just statistically speaking, that it was unlikely to be COVID-19 and much, much more likely to be a host of other viruses, including the more common coronaviruses. COVID-19 is not the only coronavirus. Mm-hmm. There are many other coronaviruses that cause, for example, a common cold. But again, the flu really was much more rampant just in the last few weeks.
Yeah, we have been hearing quite a bit about that as well. Dina is calling in from Altamont Springs. Dina, you're on the air.
Yes, please. I have a 102-year-old mother at home, and it is necessary for us to have caregivers in our home to provide care for her. I'm wondering if there are any specific kind of a checklist guideline for caregivers coming into the home, what might the precautions be?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Dr. Mansfield, and thanks for your call, Dina. Dr. Mansfield, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, could there be a checklist that you could maybe adapt from the procedures you might have for getting into a hospital, for example? Like, you know, answer these six questions and maybe stick a thermometer under your tongue and you're good to go. What would your advice be there?
I think it's a great opportunity to connect with the caregivers, particularly if they're people you know and it's a normal group that maybe comes to the home. Really have a very transparent conversation about what are they doing, what are the policies from their own company, because a lot of these home healthcare companies really are also instituting policies and procedures as to when people are allowed to work, what are the situations in which, though, that they should not be working. Mm-hmm. They should be assessing their own health and also the people that they're around. So all of the risk mitigation strategies that we're asking the community to do, we really do expect healthcare workers to keep to those same rules but be even more vigilant. So I would really encourage you to have a very good conversation with them, make sure they're in touch with their leadership so that they know what are the rules we should be following, what symptoms should we be aware of. And we know that fever, cough, shortness of breath, those type of general flu-like symptoms that people can manifest. And if that's the case, they really should not be caring for anyone, and they really should be self-isolating even more so if they're worried that they maybe became symptomatic.
Hank Fishkind, I want to bring you back into this conversation because we're talking about the sort of, you know, strictures around self-isolation and the kind of medical side of that. People have these concerns about how do I make sure that I don't get my grandparents sick, or how do I make sure that, you know, there's no risk of contamination, that kind of thing. But what about the business implications of not just shutting down theme parks and kind of shuttering that industry for, you know, a few weeks, a month, a couple of months, whatever it may be, but also about people having to work from home and not being able to go out? I mean, thinking about the challenge there, how does Orlando, Central Florida come through this?
Well, a lot of things can't be done in Orlando's economy. I mean, theme parks, hotels, restaurants, bars, which constitute more than a quarter of our total economy, are face-to-face kind of situations. So they can't be done remotely. So we're at a distinct disadvantage, relatively speaking, compared to many other places. Mm-hmm. And so we just have to hope this is going to be short in duration and that the federal and state governments can respond very forcefully and quickly to mitigate what is huge economic damage being done.
Mm-hmm. A tweet here from Jim. He writes in, if natural ecosystems followed the rules of competition, greed, and hoarding prescribed by our economic system, that ecosystem would not survive evolution. I mean, is it a moment, Hank Fishkind, to sort of step back and say we need to rethink radically the way we interact as a society?
I'm an economist, so I'll stay away from social engineering, but it's clear that this crisis, much like any other huge crisis, reveals great gaps mm-hmm. in our social and economic policy, and that will give rise to substantial change, I am sure, once we come out of this.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it's important that we all remember that as devastating and dislocating as this is, it's not going to last all that long. And so we do need to take care to remember that this recovery will come about and to learn our lessons and to make those structural changes and use this devastating event as an opportunity to recalibrate some of our social and economic policies, Matthew.
Some of the industries that revolve around tourism, the airline industry, for example, I mean, they operate on pretty slim margins, right? There's you know, the longer a shutdown or shelter in place or whatever it may be goes on, the longer this pandemic continues, you're going to see some real, damage done to those kind of industries. And that's going to have long-term implications for Central Florida, right, for the tourism industry here.
Yeah, I'm less concerned about the viability of the airlines. They'll get a significant bailout. They can go and get bankruptcy protection. I'm much more concerned, Matthew, about our restaurants and bars and service workers. They don't have another place to turn. And this could be very devastating to a significant portion of our local economy.
And keep in mind, too, Darden Restaurants had their investor call this morning, and I was listening in, and one of the things they talked about was how one of the ways, they're trying really hard not to spend money and kind of hold on to as much cash as they can right now to weather this out. One of the ways to do that, they're not doing a stock buyback or dividend. I forget what the correct term for it is. But one of the other things they're doing is they're stopping construction. So all the new construction that they're doing, if they can shut it down, unless it's absolutely critical, they're shutting it down. And that's just going to be another industry and another area of the economy that's going to have people who are no longer able to work when companies are pulling back and holding on to cash. Ideally, hopefully, so that they can continue to pay their employees while everyone's kind of struggling through this. But mm-hmm. it's still going to have other impacts.
Yeah, and there may be some kind of relocation of workers, right? I mean, if your job goes away and you can't afford to stay in Orlando, then perhaps some of these businesses may be struggling to find the employees that they need to get up and running once we get through this.
That was one of the things that they discussed on the call, was if it comes down to it, they really don't want to have they want to hold on to as much of their Darden's workforce as they can. And one of the things that they're considering is if it comes down to it, maybe we can do furloughs so that even if someone's not getting a paycheck, they're still on the company payroll, so they still have their tenure, they still have benefits and things like that. So it's we saw during the last recession, though, that some of these industries that are like construction, some of the workforce will go to where the jobs are. Now, this is nationwide, so it's going to be, it's not necessarily impacting only Orlando, but, construction might be happening over in Michigan or something to that effect. But I do think that is a possibility that, people might move, if need be.
Mm-hmm. Just the last minute or so we have remaining here, Hank Fishkind, sort of listening to some of these concerns, does it seem like we are going to be looking to the federal government, the state government, to bridge people through this period and get some of these companies, these individuals who are out of work now through the next 2-3 months?
Absolutely. And I do think that the state and federal governments are marshaling all of their resources to do that. Whether it'll come quickly enough and how robust it'll be will determine how much damage there'll be, Matthew.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have been covering the COVID-19 outbreak, talking about your concerns and considerations as the pandemic unfolds. You can continue to follow our coronavirus coverage. We're at WMFE.org. Also, if you still have unanswered questions or comments and you'd like to share your thoughts there, you can fill out our online survey. You can also find that online. at WMFE.org. We've been speaking to economic commentator Hank Fishkind. He is the president of Fishkind Litigation Services. Dr. Hank Fishkind, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
And also with us this hour, Dr. Omira Mansfield. She is the chief medical officer at Advent Health Apopka and Advent Health Winter Garden. Dr. Mansfield, thanks so much for your expertise and your thoughts as well.
Thank you for having me.
90.7's health reporter Abe Abaraya, sort of bridging those two fields there, economics and health. Thank you so much for weighing in as well.
Thank you.
Support for Intersection comes from Advent Health and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Our intern is Monica Seely. Production assistance from Juan Gualda, Mac Dula. Today, thank you so much for listening. I'm Matthew Petty. You can follow us on Twitter at WMFE Orlando, and I'm at Matthew_Petty.